All right. Hello, everyone, and welcome to Dirty Talk. It's been a second. So Arna and I think are going to have kind of long check-ins, but I'm Vivian, or Viv, and I use she and they pronouns.
I'm Arna, and I use she, her pronouns. And yeah, I can start off with my check-in. We're both back from our first years at college right now. It's the summer. I actually go back to New York on Tuesday, and which is, for the sake of reference, 2 days away. So I'm gonna go back soon. But yeah, it's been a good year, good first year of college. You know, obviously a lot happened as with everyone's first freshman year, but I'm not gonna get into all of that. But yeah, I'm super excited to get into the next year of college and kind of work more on a lot of different, like, sex education and reproductive justice work. I'm actually doing another sex ed podcast with NYU. Like, NYU is starting a sex ed podcast, and I'm, like, helping them out with it. So once that starts up, you know, I will send it out throughout these channels, like throughout our Instagram for Dirty Talk and everything, and you guys can check that out as well. But yeah, that's my check-in for today.
Yeah, that's super cool. That's so exciting. I'll definitely be listening, because that's awesome. I didn't know about that. So that's super cool to hear about. Congratulations.
Yeah.
Yeah, I also am just finishing up my first, like, year of college, my freshman year. And it was, like, honestly one of the most difficult years of my life, which I feel like it is for a lot of people, but it was, like, such a big adjustment, and I feel like no one really talks about it.
Mm-hmm.
In that way, people are just like, oh my god, freedom, independence, but it's a lot of work. But I'm really excited for this upcoming year. I leave, on the 20th of this month. So that's really exciting. I'm gonna be, like, moving into my own place, which is cool. And yeah, I'm just, like, wrapping up stuff, over the summer and, like, working and figuring everything out. But it's been really nice. It's been mellow. So that's good.
Yeah, that's great. So we'll just jump right into it like we do every time. Today we're going to be talking about sexual empowerment in the male gaze. And yeah, just to start off, I can read this definition of sexual empowerment that I found, just to kind of set the tone. But this is, like, from, I think, some kind of a study, Peterson and Zimmerman. But sexual empowerment is a psychosocial process whereby less powerful individuals gain more power and control over their sexuality through healthy sexual experiences and more claim to resources. So I feel like I don't, like, love this definition. I don't like the whole thing of, like, less powerful individuals. I don't love that phrasing necessarily. But I guess it's kind of trying to say that people who have, like, experiences where they were more sexually suppressed, which is the truth. There, you know, sexual empowerment is more important for people, like women or people of color or trans folks who maybe have been sexually suppressed because of the way that our society works. And I think one of the more important part of this definition is more claim to resources. I think that's super important, that how sexual empowerment can sort of be increased by more claim to resources and just more, like, sexual healthcare, access to, like, sexual healthcare and reproductive healthcare, which I think is so important to be thinking about at this point in time. So yeah, I think that how I would define sexual empowerment is just, like, a process by which you get to know yourself and your body better, that makes you confident in your sexuality, in yourself, and just gives you more agency and autonomy in your sexual relationships, or just, like, even in your everyday life. And I think it's just super important to talk about this topic. And today we're going to be talking about it primarily through, like, female sexual empowerment, or, you know, like, and taking it through the sense of, like, female sexual empowerment and how it's important because women are most often seen, like, through this male gaze. and kind of taking it through that lens, because, you know, the sexual empowerment, like it said in that definition about less powerful individuals, while I don't love that phrasing, it is, you know, sexual empowerment has always been more important for women, because our sexuality has been labeled and controlled by the public sphere, by the male gaze, and just kind of distorted and objectified in ways that we haven't always had control over. So yeah, that's going to be kind of like our primary focus, like female sexual empowerment. And also, like, you know, in tangent to that, like queer sexual empowerment, because also like queer sexuality has also been super suppressed. And there's like barely any resources in mainstream sex education to empower queer people to have like the most, you know, sexually empowered experiences. So that's kind of what we're going to be talking about today. But yeah, off to you, Viv.
Yeah, I think that definitely it is like best for us to be speaking from a place of like our own knowledge and experience with sexual empowerment. And I feel like a big part of that is like recognizing that our perspective is like woman aligned and like queer aligned, and like keeping that in mind, that it may not apply to you, but it still is something that like is important to listen to, especially because like Arna was saying, like female sexual empowerment is something that is like more repressed and like harder for people to understand. So I think that's definitely like a huge part of it. I would say like even like listening to this podcast could be a form of sexual empowerment for people, or like I know recording it is for me, because I get to kind of parse out some things that I've been thinking about, like either socially or like about myself. So that's really cool and exciting. But yeah, I think sexual empowerment is like a huge topic. It's very diverse and individual for everyone. But it's super cool, and super exciting. And I hope like this episode brings up like some thoughts for people. Even if it's stuff that we don't like explicitly state, like kind of being able to parse out those like things within yourself is a huge part of sexual empowerment.
Yeah, I liked what you said about, you know, like how talking on the podcast even like helps with your own sexual empowerment, because I feel like for me, the majority of my sexual empowerment has actually come through my experiences with teen council.
Yeah, absolutely.
And for those of you who maybe joined, this might be the first episode you're listening to. For reference point, me and Viv both know each other from Planned Parenthood's teen council, where we were both sex educators. And yeah, I think that was a really transformative experience for me, because, I mean, just like, you know, a big aspect in like female sexual empowerment or sexual empowerment in general is also like cultural values and other aspects surrounding like female sexuality. And I say female sexuality specifically because I feel like in a lot of different cultures, one of the more universal values is that like women have to be more like modest, or like until it's coming to like a perspective of marriage, you can't be that sexually empowered, like you can't take the first step, you know. Even in this day, it's like sometimes it's not as common for like the woman to propose or whatever that may be. Obviously, like that's not like unheard of, but you know, it's definitely not the norm either. And so just like that sexual empowerment, that confidence of like sexuality and romance, you know, is something that I feel like universally is pretty absent for women. If I may say so myself, as someone who's lived in India and the US, I think at least in my knowledge and my experiences, both of those countries do not empower their women sexually at all. And it's definitely from the male gaze. And what that means is like, oh, you know, like, how are you going to please a man? Nothing for like pleasing yourself or how to be confident in your own body, but it's all aligned with the male gaze. And we'll talk more on that. Sorry, I tangentiated. But for me, living in India and growing up in India and even in the US, I never had that sexual empowerment, or even just I hadn't even been told that I had the agency to explore myself, my identity, my body. But it was through teen council that I learned so much more about these topics, you know, and like kind of like a shout out to our masturbation episode. I feel like that also plays into the sexual empowerment a lot. Obviously, like masturbation may be a good tool of sexual empowerment for some people and not for others. But for me, it was definitely a big part of my journey. And it was also like teen council also played a role in that, just like getting more informed about like sexuality and sexual expression. So yeah, I think that for me was a very formative experience that made me so much more comfortable just talking about sexuality. I feel like for sexual empowerment in our society, one of the first things is just being comfortable talking about sex and sexuality, you know? Yeah. Like that itself is such a big empowering thing, because especially for like young women, if we talk about like sex and sexuality, we're like branded as promiscuous. There doesn't even need to be any action. You just like say something and it's like taken as weird. And I know there's like a lot of progress in that arena. And I think, as I've seen it myself, me and my peers have become way more sex positive and way more like approaching sex and sexuality through a female gaze as well. But I'm just talking about this from like a more traditional mainstream lens.
No, absolutely. I think sexual empowerment is something that is extremely taboo to talk about. And I especially resonate with you, like, just, like, practicing talking about sexuality in, like, a non-sexualized environment through teen council was something that, like, opened up so many, like, doorways for me in terms of, like, thinking about, like, my own sexuality and sexual experience, which was super awesome. And I, like, hope this podcast can do the same for other people, because I think it's all about, like, listening and practicing, like, talking about these topics, because that's also gonna help you, like, be able to communicate your boundaries better. Like, something I feel like I've definitely said before on this podcast, and, like, just that I say in general quite a bit, is if you can't be talking about sex with someone, that you shouldn't be having sex with them, because there's no way that you'll be able to comfortably communicate, like, a boundary. If that's the case, it's just not something that you should be doing for your own, like, personal safety. Like, you should be comfortable communicating with this person about what you're doing with them, you know?
Yeah, definitely.
And that's,
I feel like, oh, sorry. Oh, ahead.
And that's something that, I don't know, I'm, like, hoping that we can, like, share with people. I also, like, got really excited because we were, like, checking our podcast stats, because we never do, like, before recording this, and, like, we saw that our masturbation episode was, like, the most listened to episode of all of, the podcasts that we've put out, and that, like, really, like, that made me super excited, because if anything, like, people are listening and trying to understand themselves better, and, like, Arna, like you said, like, masturbation can be, like, a really good jumping off point for figuring out, like, your own sexual empowerment, like, and what you like purely for yourself. So I think that's really cool.
Yeah, and I feel like sexual empowerment doesn't even need to be about sex. Like, I feel like, yeah, for me, in my own personal life, just, like, general confidence. Like, just thinking about, like, how it, from, and, you know, from my own personal experience, knowing that I am someone who knows my body so well, and who knows my own sexuality and my identity so well, it gives me confidence in my everyday life, you know?
Absolutely.
Just like, and it's also like a psychological and subconscious thing. Like that definition we read out, it's a psychosocial thing, right? Sexual empowerment is a psychosocial phenomena. So it really does, like, being sexually empowered does really improve your confidence and just the way you hold yourself, because you just have that empowerment in general. So I think that's also super important. Like, even if you don't really even have to approach sexual empowerment from a super hyper-sexualized lens at all. It could just be something to improve your own confidence or to improve your own relationship with yourself. And yeah, I think it's what Viv brought up about communication is super important. Like, knowing what you like, knowing yourself. Also just advocating for yourself. Like, that confidence of knowing that, like, hey, my sexuality and my sexual pleasure, my sexual experience is important. It should be at the forefront of my relationship just as much as, like, my partner's. And so, like, advocating for yourself in a relationship to be like, hey, I don't want to do this. Hey, I want to do this. Hey, I would like it if you could try this out with me. You know, not in a pressurizing sense, but just, like, in an advocating for your way, for your self-sense. And I think, again, bringing this back to, like, speaking about our experiences as women or taking it from more of a female lens, I think that often a lot of mainstream narratives about sex and sexuality have always been from the male gaze, like, even in porn or, like, in erotica or, like, even just, like, on TV where they have sex scenes, you only see, like, penetration. And the truth is, like, you know, like, there's so much else that could be so much, so pleasurable for women, like clitoral stimulation or whatnot. And that's not to say that penetration can't be, pleasurable, yeah. But honestly, speaking from my own experience and what I've heard from my friends, there's a lot more that can go a longer way than penetration.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And, like, what I will say is there's this statistic of, like only 20% of women can, like, confidently reach orgasm through penetration. Like, it's not, like, a very large percent of the population of, I guess, like, people with vaginas who can experience, like, orgasm consistently through penetration. So, like, there's so much stress, like, on and, like, centering, like, people with penises in, like, a conversation about sex and in depictions of sex. Just because I think partially because that's the type of sex that produces children. And I think that's definitely, like, a huge emphasis on, like, especially in, like, more conservative areas of, like, why you should be having sex. Like, you should be having sex to reproduce and for no other reason, which I think is definitely, like, something that gets spread around a lot, especially in, like, a conversation about abortion. Where, like, people are like, oh, well, if, like, and we are gonna do another episode, like, about Roe v. Wade, so I won't, like, talk on this too much. But people that are like, oh, well, just don't have sex. And so that restricts sex to, like, different classes, first of all, because if you're rich enough, you can fly to get an abortion anywhere, and be fine. And it restricts, like, sex to something that people don't have for pleasure, but to reproduce, which I think is really sad, and isn't sexually empowering, like, in the slightest.
Yes. Yeah. And I think also, like, going back to, like, even media portrayals, because I think media is one of the main ways we learn about sex, you know, whether that be porn Absolutely. Or TV or movies or books. I feel like it's literally the primary way, because let's be honest, our sex education isn't the best, you know?
No, not at
Me
all.
And Viv might have gotten a good one, because we worked with Planned Parenthood, but for the most part, I think even my introduction to sex and sexuality was definitely from the media, so I think it bears weight to talk about the media.
Absolutely.
And I feel like even, like, talking about, like, queer sex and queer sexual empowerment, I really haven't seen any, like, sexual scenes depicted where they actually show, like, queer pleasure or, like, you know, what a queer person may like. I feel like you just see, like, a little bit of kissing and a horizontal point of view, and then it just, like, fizzles out from there. So, you know, yeah, and I, again, once again, while we do want to be inclusive, you know, I'm also speaking from personal experience as a woman, so I wouldn't know the extent of it. But yeah, like Viv said, there's not much depiction of female sexual pleasure at all in media, or even just, like, consideration of it. And I think that it just, like, that's why it's so important for us to advocate in our individual relationships, so that we're getting the pleasure we want, so that we're getting the healthy relationships that we want. And knowing what we like, being sexually empowered, allows us to advocate in our relationships, in our daily lives, just gives us that confidence. And before we move on, I also wanted to define male gaze and consequently female gaze, because I think we're getting into that territory, especially talking about media, etc. So yeah, so basically in feminist theory, male gaze is like the act of portraying women and also like the larger world, but for the sake of this conversation, portraying women in like media, etc., from like a masculine, cisgendered, heterosexual perspective. That often, more often than not, presents women as sexual objects for the pleasure of the heterosexual male viewer. Basically, it's kind of what it is, male gaze. So the portrayal of these women in these, whatever media you may be watching, is like for the male gaze. It's for men. So women are portrayed the way stereotypical cishet man likes them to be portrayed.
Yeah.
And of course, there's a lot of media out there that I genuinely think combats the male gaze, and we can maybe reference those in our media recs for today. But I feel like especially porn is very male gaze.
Oh,
very,
absolutely.
Very male gaze.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And there's so many. We're also, I think, gonna do an episode on like porn and porn culture.
Yeah.
But there's so many ways that porn is just completely unethical. And I think part of it is definitely, like, reinforcing that standard of the way, like, women are supposed to act and be, especially during sex. Like, I'm gonna be honest, I don't watch a lot of porn, but I think like, all of it that I've seen, like, there's no conversation beforehand of, like, hey, are you okay if I do this? Or, like, hey, like, I would really like this. Like, there's no advocacy, especially, like, by women, for either boundaries, which I think are more important in the long run, or, like, things that will, like, bring pleasure, you know? Like, it's just not something that is normalized at all. And again, like, being sexually empowered is crucial to having healthy sexual relationships, and a big part of that is, like, being able to communicate. So, yeah.
Yeah, I completely agree. And I think also, like, talking more about the male gaze, even, like, besides media and porn, just, like, you know, I feel like the male gaze also perpetuates itself in our daily life. Like, and I'm pretty sure we have mentioned this in a couple of our other episodes. Like, even, like, the double standard of female sexuality, you know, of where it's, like, you have to be, like, modest and docile and, like, the virgin, but you also have to be, like, secretly a freak in the sheets, you know?
Yeah.
When you do get a boyfriend, so that you can really please your boyfriend, or, and again, talking about this from a really cishet perspective, I'm recognizing that, but to kind of delve more into the male gaze related to female sexual empowerment, I'm just using these terms, but yeah, you have to, like, please your partner in the sheets, but also, like, before that, have no sexual experience whatsoever. It just, like, has to come to you innately. Like,
absolutely.
You have to be, like, this, like, slutty virgin. I don't, like, it's, like, so contradictory.
Yeah.
But, yeah, so those are, like, some ways that the male gaze may perpetuate ourselves in our daily lives, because it's, like, wanting women to be the way it benefits men, not the way we really are as women. And also, I think that one of the main ways the male gaze does perpetuate itself in our daily lives is, like, through ideas of, like, conventional beauty.
Oh, yeah.
Or, like, you know, like, the thought of, like, oh, like, let's be honest, there might have been times in our lives or in like experiences we've had where we've done something, or a friend of ours has done something for the male gaze to, like, maybe, you know, please a guy they like. It's completely normal. It's not our fault. It's kind of like the way we've been brought up. And also, when you, like, have a little crush on someone, it makes sense that you kind of want to, like, have, like, a, like, I don't know, like, attract them or whatever. But I feel like often there have been times where I see this, like, rhetoric, whether in media or just in conversations with my friends, of, like, when you're dressing up, and it's, like, they're just, like, subtle indications that, you know, it might be, there is something that might be happening for the benefit of the male gaze. And, of course, I feel like as we grow up, we've turned away from that more and more, and as we've come from, at least for me, as I've, like, gone through my own journey of sexual empowerment, I've turned away from, like, doing things for the male gaze more and more. But I think, you know, there definitely is this, there's, like, you know, the idea of internalized male gaze, that's, like, yeah, a phenomena as well. I don't know, like, for more pop cultural reference, like, pick me girls, as
oh, yeah,
you call them.
For sure.
You might have seen them on TikTok or whatever, but, like, pick me girls is basically just internalized male gaze, like, doing things for the male gaze to make yourself admirable in a man's eye. And this isn't to, like, shame anyone. I think it is something that just comes to us by the way society implements it in us. But yeah, so male gaze isn't just, like, a media thing. It's also just something that happens in our daily life, especially with, like, conventional standards of beauty. Speaking as a woman of color, I know that having conversations with other women of color friends of mine, I know that there's often been times when we've reflected on how the American male gaze or the Caucasian, like, male gaze doesn't always, like, hold women of color in a high standard, unless it's in a fetishized way, you
yeah
know?
Which is so frustrating, because I have so many, like, friends who are women of color that are, like, the most beautiful women that I know. And just to have that, like, completely not recognized by the media and society, like, really deeply hurts me. And it's something that I'll never fully understand, like, as a white woman, obviously. But I think that is a really big part of it, is kind of seeing the male gaze as, you know, it originated as a film term, and kind of describing the camera lens as a man's perspective, and how everything is shot, like, from the point of view of a man. And so kind of when applying that to yourself, like, thinking, like, am I, like, is there a little man in the back of my head right now, like, telling me, like, oh, I should dress this way, or, oh, I should do this in order to be seen, like, this way, you know? Because I definitely, like, myself have moments where I'm like, oh, like, I don't want to show too much cleavage, like, it's not, like, appropriate for the situation, especially, like, being someone, like, with larger boobs. Like, I have triple D's, and it, like, sucks. Because there's so many things that, like, my friends with smaller chests could wear, and, like, it wouldn't be seen as, like, sexual, but if I do it, it's, like, whoa, like, calm down, like, this is not that type of, like, party, or whatever, which is really sad, because it's not something I can control at all about my body, and so even, like, something as, like, as specific as, like, your proportions can, like, control the way you dress because of the male gaze, which is, like, super frustrating and, like, something that I definitely work on.
Yeah, definitely. And I think, you know what, when I'm thinking about this, I think one of the main ways that the male gaze has, like, cemented itself in our lives is the shaving of body hair, if
I may say. Oh, absolutely, yeah.
And honestly, like, at the end of the day, like, if I didn't, like, shave my armpits or whatever, it wouldn't, like, bother me. Like, you know, like, I barely feel the hair there. Like, it's not gonna bother me. But every time I'm, like, getting ready to go out and I notice that, oh, I forgot to shave my armpits or whatever, it's, like, a horror. It's, like, oh, my God, I can't go out like this. So I'm, like, wearing a top that's, like, sleeveless or something. You know, but at the end of the day, it's, like, what does it even really mean? Like, I'm just, like, going out to get coffee or whatever. But I feel like it's really cemented itself in our lives. And it's totally valid to shave your hair. I do it. Like I just mentioned, I do it. And that's not to say that to be, I don't want to, like, sound like one of those, like, people who's, like, to be a true feminist means not to shave your body hair. Do what you want with your body, and it's totally valid if you feel more comfortable shaving your body hair. I just feel like somewhere along the way, it was cemented in by the male gaze. Because, like, I there isn't any scientific reason to do it, and obviously men aren't doing it, so I feel like it was at some point cemented by the male gaze.
Yeah, it actually, like, does, like, hurt you to an extent. Like, body hair is there for a reason. Like, your armpit and pubic hair are, like, there to protect against bacteria, and they're, like, a layer of protection that you are just removing in order to, like, have a specific appearance, which I think is fine. I don't know. I definitely go back and forth between, like, shaving and not shaving. And I have, like, I think it's very different and, like, partially, like, a racial issue, because I have, like, really light, like, I have blonde body hair. So it's not as noticeable if I don't shave my armpits for a while, or, like, I can go without shaving my legs for a really long time and no one will notice because the hair is, like, transparent. But that's, like, not the case for my friends that have darker hair. And it's something that definitely, like, targets women of color specifically, of, like, oh, you don't shave your legs. Like, I can see that. Like, it's frustrating.
Yeah, I definitely relate to that, because I remember, not to get too much into, like, a story, but there was, like, a time in high school where, like, this guy would, like, mock me for not shaving my legs. So, like, as an Indian woman with the stereotypically dark, thick hair, I definitely get what you're saying. And yeah, I do shave. You know, I think probably maybe because of that experience or other such, like, just narratives I've heard, I do shave my hair or try to do it pretty regularly, unless I'm, like, super lazy, because, like, it takes so much effort, genuinely.
Yeah.
But, you know, I do try to shave my hair, and it does, like, make me feel more confident.
Yeah.
But, you know, somewhere along the way, I do wonder to myself, like, does it make me feel more confident because I'm adhering to the larger male gaze, or the larger societal beauty standard, and I know that I'm not at risk of, like, being perceived in a different way. I think, yeah, there's some truth in that. But also, you know, at the end of the day, we have to recognize that some of these standards have been upheld for centuries, you know? And so at the end of, like, if, like, it's not your fault if you want to look a certain way, or if you want to subscribe to the beauty standard. Like, if you don't feel completely debilitated by it, it's fine. Like, do what you need to. Like, it's, if you want to change your appearance a certain way to adhere to a certain ideal, it's totally valid, because it's not our fault that there is a certain way that beauty is perceived in our society. But it's also important to know that you're beautiful just as you are, in that your body hair is not going to change anything. Yeah. I guess what I'm trying to say is that you're going to be beautiful nevertheless, whether or not you adhere to these standards, but it's your choice what you do with your body. And yeah, I feel like shaving makes me feel more confident, but unraveling that thread of why does it make me feel more confident is also a tricky conversation.
Yeah, and I think there's cases to be made for, like, both, like, giving people the choice to shave their legs and, like, the obvious thing of, like, if no one shaved their legs, like, women would have, like you said, shaving is a pain. Like, women would have, like, extra time. And it also, like, there wouldn't be that, like, confidence boost or barrier if someone hadn't shaved. So, like, kind of deconstructing that is a really, like, I don't know, it's a line that I walk a lot where I'm like, okay, like, not to, like, shame people for shaving, but, like, if I didn't shave, it would probably make my friends feel more comfortable not shaving, and so forth. And so kind of, like, exploring that has been something that is, like, really interesting.
Yeah, definitely.
And, like, difficult for me to parse out.
Yeah, also because, you know, I think that's a lot of this is not our own creation. Like, we, as Gen Zers especially, as, like, relatively recent introductions into society, we entered a world where women were supposed to shave. That's how we were brought up.
Yeah.
So it's not our fault that we have internalized that. It's only natural.
Yeah.
You know?
Absolutely.
So it's not anyone's fault. So, and it's not, like, not to shame anyone who does do it. Because, again, I do it. Or at least I try to until I forget it. But yeah, it's just like unraveling that thread of like, why is this even a thing is interesting, because it is like, you know, again, only like women who are like given that pressure to shave their body hair. And I think for most part, it is because of a sexual thing. You know what I mean? Like, mm-hmm. I think it's innately for sexual reasons. Like, it's not for any sort of comfort, I don't think. Like, it's first, like, I definitely don't think it was for labor reasons, because for a long time, women weren't even allowed in the labor force. So I don't think it's for any sort of comfort or like movement related stuff. I think it's primarily because of like a sexual thing and the sexualization of women's bodies to be these like completely perfect, spotless, porcelain like figures.
Oh yeah, you know? Definitely. Yeah. And I think something that I like was thinking about and wanted to bring up in this episode is like the male gaze as it pertains to like hookups. And, like, kind of the elaborate ritual that most women I know, like, and myself go through, where, like, before you, like, are going to, like, hook up with someone, like, you literally, like, comb every inch of your body, like, to make, like, yeah. This, like, image. You know? Like, there's, like, this entire, like, shaving thing. And you'll even see, like, you'll see TikToks and, like, videos of, like, here's my, like, pre-hookup routine where I, like, take a shower and shave my legs and, like, put on perfume and do all of these things. And that's like something where the male gaze is very apparent for me of like, oh, like even if you're like not necessarily like going to have sex with a man, like obviously, but there is like that ritual is part of like definitely cementing a certain image.
Yeah, I definitely know what you mean. And again, talking about this from a primarily heterosexual lens, I recognize that. But also, and again, want to emphasize that I'm not shaming or blaming any individual woman or person. This is not our fault. This is not our shame to uphold. It's just kind of like a reflection on why our sexuality is the way it is and mm-hmm. how much role the male gaze has played into it. And at the end of the day, you have complete agency to forget about this conversation and still proceed with your sexuality and your body the way you do, because it's your choice and there's no shame involved whatsoever.
Oh, absolutely. Way. I'm not saying this in a shaming way at all. Like, I'm saying this from like a personal perspective of like, this is what I go through before I like hook up with someone. Like, I'm gonna shave my legs and like take a shower and like make sure I'm like a presentable, like, even like presentable is like an interesting thing to explore, but like you do like set yourself up to be like a certain like way when you go have sex with someone, which is frustrating.
And I wanted to reference, like, I see a lot of like these TikToks. I don't know if it's like just this one creator, But again, not shaming any individual person, but this one creator who always makes videos of, like, getting ready to see my sneaky link or whatever mm-hmm. that may be, and it endures, like, a long process of, like, body scrub, lotion, all these, like, different products, which I will admit, I find fascinating, interesting. Maybe I would get some of those for myself when my budget and wallet allows. But yeah, all of these, like, products and, like, you know, like, fancy underwear and this and that. And come on, we all know that, at least in my life, no man I have ever met has ever put in, like, a quarter of that effort.
No.
A quarter. Not even a shower before. Like, some deodorant. Like, nothing. Not even, like, cleaning up their room.
No, I've never seen, like, a lingerie for men situation, you know, to, like, even, like, get down to, like, underwear. And, like, you know, like, no one's gonna be like, oh my god, I love wearing lingerie, it's the most comfortable thing ever. Like, no one says that. Like, it's not, like, you put your body through all of these, like, weird, like, sort of, like, masochistic rituals in order to, like, present a certain image to have, like, sex with someone. And I think that definitely says a lot about the male gaze and, like, the double standard of, like, what are men doing? Like, maybe, like, maybe cleaning their room.
Yeah, and in most cases, I feel like the woman doesn't even get any aftercare. They just, like, bounce.
Oh, no, yeah.
Like, all of that effort for what? And, oh my god, don't even get me started on how most of us probably don't even actually orgasm for, like, all of that. Like, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But, yeah, I think that also it's important to recognize that the male gaze is something that's honestly so cemented in our society, and like we said, we were born into society with it. So at the same time, I feel like wearing sexy lingerie could sexually empower someone, and that is also super valid.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Like,
you know, like, I feel like that's something I relate to, and a lot of my friends and peers relate to, and that's totally valid. And yeah, sometimes it's also valid to just, like, wear sexy lingerie for yourself. Maybe you're just going to get coffee, and no one's going to see what you're wearing, but you want to wear it for yourself. And I know people who do that. I've done that a couple of times. Like, if that gives you confidence, that's totally valid.
Totally.
But yeah, just thinking about, like, the double standard, I think, is more where the male gaze comes in rather than the act itself.
No, like, yeah, I agree.
Because the man, like, I can count on my fingers how many, like, actually presentable-looking men I know.
Oh, no. It's like, definitely, like, a thing of, like, there's, again, like, it is, like, this entire ritual that, like, at the end of the day, if it was removed, like, women would just have a lot more time. Like, I think about, like, the time I would save if I wasn't, like, if I didn't regularly, like, put on makeup in the morning or, like, paint my nails and, like, stuff like that. And so when I'm gonna have, like, a busy day, I'm, like, usually I don't wear makeup, and I, like, try and remove, like, kind of things in my way that are optional for men, and it, like, helps me have, like, a more productive day, usually.
No, yeah, definitely. And yeah, I do think that in recent years there's become, like, using things that the male gaze implemented on us to empowering ourselves, like, mm-hmm. using makeup to empower ourselves. Like, now I think makeup has truly become, like, an artistic thing rather than a make myself pretty thing, because we are already pretty. But yes, you want to use makeup, all about it. But I mean, like, you know, like the inventive eyeliner or, like, all these different colors that, like, aren't traditional, and it's, like, feels more like painting your face rather than, like, makeup, I think is beautiful, because it's, like, using something that essentially at some point in time the male gaze implemented on us to kind of make it our own, I think is super great. And I think that is happening a lot with women. But I think, you know, I'm just, if we want to talk more about the sexual empowerment stuff some more before we move on, I think we're
totally, yeah, we're like getting, we hit like 38 minutes. But, with sexual empowerment, I think it is, like, a super individualized thing where you have to recognize, like, okay, what, like, again, it's, like, part of that is just, like, recognizing the little voice in your head that says, like, do this because people will see you this way, and, like, removing that, or knowing when, like, that is something that's useful is something that I've, like, really, like, used as a tool for myself. I think it was, like, Margaret Atwood that described, like, the male gaze as, like, the little man in the back of your head, that, like, tells you to do a certain thing. But I definitely am like, okay, how much of this is just, like, a little man in the back of my head telling me that I'm gonna look like a whore if, like, my tits are out in this situation? And how much of that, like, do I want to listen to? And usually I try and, like, push past that, where I'm like, okay, like, no, like, I will wear, like, this dress, and I don't care. And if people sexualize me, like, that's on them. It's not my fault. And I feel like that's a big, like, even just the reversal of, like, if people sexualize me, it's not my fault, is something that has been super important to my, like, personal, like, sexual empowerment. Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. I think your point about individualized experiences is super important, because I think both sexual empowerment and experiences with the male gaze differ from individual to individual. And I think the most important part to stress is that it's a journey. And these, again, these are all things that have been implemented or, like, perpetuated towards us on a daily basis since the moment we were born. So it's far from easy to completely deconstruct the male gaze. And there's no judgment to anyone who doesn't even want to bother with it.
Yeah.
So if just as long as you know that the male gaze exists and what it entails, if you're fine with it, like, yeah, do what you want. Like, that's the whole point of being empowered, right? Making that choice. Empowerment is about choice and agency.
Yes.
So it doesn't matter what choice you take. Your sexual empowerment could be that you don't want to have sex, that you don't want to engage in any of this, and that's totally valid too.
Exactly.
You should just have the choice and resources.
No.
Like, going back to the definition of, like, the resources, like, you should have sex education so that if you want to be sexually active, you have the empowerment to do so.
Yeah. Something that I, like, absolutely want to stress that you definitely, like, touched on is that empowerment is about choice and agency, like you said. And something that I think that a lot of, like, pop feminism doesn't get at right now is the nuance of sexual empowerment being something that is about choice and is about, like, the ability to say no. I see a lot of women just being like, oh, I'm so sexually empowered because I have sex all the time and I don't care. And, like, that completely removes the idea that sex can be something that is, like, really impactful and, like, really, like, something that can really, like, have a profound impact on you and your relationships with people, and it's not something that, like, you should just dismiss if you don't want to. And I think that's something that definitely is not in, like, the popular conversation right now. Like, it's not something I see people talking about as much, is, like, you can be sexually empowered and not be having sex. And that is huge. Like, I had this conversation with my friend where she was like, yeah, like, I really loved a lot of the friends that I made in college this year. Like, I had a great freshman year. But one thing that I really didn't like about them is that they kept, like, telling me that I needed to have sex and get laid. And that, like, that was something that I kind of felt a lot of pressure. And I had to remind myself, like, I'm an experienced person. I'm sexually experienced in a lot of different ways. I don't need to have a partner to gain more sexual experience or empowerment, and this is something that's completely my choice, and I'm not ready to be having sex with people right now. And I was like, I'm so sorry that people are telling you that. Like, sex is not something that defines our experience or defines our success in any capacity.
Yeah.
And I think it's something that has been, like, held up that way. Like, even, like, making jokes about, like, people being virgins for, like, listening to, like, certain types of music or something like that, like, annoy the shit out of me. Like, I'm like, you should not be, and I'm definitely guilty of, like, making jokes like that, but you should not be, like, shaming people for their, like, sexual status, you know? Like, I feel like that's, like, kind of body shaming, almost, where you're like, haha, you haven't done this, so you're not as good as me. Which is, like, super messed up, and I don't think we fully, like, have unpacked that yet, like, in, like, kind of a cultural conversation of, like, no, we, like, actually shouldn't be shaming people for the amount of sexual experience that they have, or, like, positioning the idea that you need to have a partner to have sexual experience.
No, definitely, I completely agree, yeah. But yeah, I guess, you know, kind of just to wrap up, sexual empowerment is all about having resource and access to make informed choices about your own sexuality and just know yourself, you know. But yeah, if we want to move on to media, right, because I've kind of been thinking in the back of my head of some media that I think is female gaze.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah, and again, to point out, we'll probably talk a lot more about these topics in our porn culture episode, and also check out our masturbation episode for similar conversations. But yeah, we can move on to media rex.
Mm-hmm.
I've actually read a lot of like very specific female gaze books that all focus on like Greek mythology.
Oh,
as it happens.
I'm so excited to have this like these recommendations. That's super interesting.
No, yeah, and I think I guess there's been a lot of discussion in Greek mythology scholar area about how like women are portrayed in Greek myths through the male gaze. And I think that's another important part of like cultural influences of the male gaze. But I'll get into the actual recommendation. So there's this book called Pandora's Jar by Natalie Haynes, which I think is just like the best book collectively, because it takes like all of these different women, like each chapter is a different woman, and it really analyzes their story. So I wouldn't say it's fiction. I would say it actually kind of reads more like the academic book, because it's more like analytical and analyzing stories, like analytical commentary. But I enjoyed it. I thought I would have to like really like struggle my way through it, because it was more like drier writing. But I don't know, it's not that dry at all, and it was really interesting, even though it's like nonfiction and kind of like analyzing other mythical tales and literature. But yeah, Pandora's Jar by Natalie Haynes. And then that same author, Natalie Haynes, has written A Thousand Ships, which is also one of my favorite books of, like, all time. And that one is basically telling the Trojan War through the perspectives of different Greek and Trojan women involved in the war who weren't even mentioned in the actual stories, like, written ages ago. Yeah, that one's pretty good. There's Circe by Madeline Miller, which follows the tale of Circe, like, the archetypical sorceress in Greek mythology. That one's pretty good. But yeah, even if you just like search up, I think there's actually a lot of that specific genre of literature has a lot of female gaze stuff coming up.
Yeah.
That's super cool. And yeah, I'm trying to think of like other books. I think a lot of romance books, like smutty romance novels, can be super empowering. For me, I would say Talia Hibbert is a great author. She wrote a trilogy that's like like three sisters and their individual like romance stories, and it's just like a little rom-com vibe.
Aww.
But I think that there's like some erotic scenes that definitely focus on female pleasure and like consent and just like sexual empowerment. So Talia Hibbert is a great author to check out. And I also like I would say Talia Hibbert is my main one, and then you know you can just spiral from there. I think it would lead you to some different authors, but yeah, I think those are my recs.
Totally. Now. Do you have anything else, like any movies or anything, or?
I feel like honestly, a lot of the TV shows I've been watching, like the newer ones, are pretty female gazey. To be honest, like a lot of like the
sick.
For the younger audiences, I would say they're more female gazey. I'm trying to think of like. I think Booksmart is a pretty female-gazed
movie. Yeah, absolutely. I love that movie.
Yeah, I would say Booksmart's a good one. What was this? I forget. It's like, it has the girl who plays Nancy. I'm going to look it up. From Nancy and Stranger Things.
Yeah. No, I think
yes,
I know.
Yes, God. Yes, God.
Yeah, I saw that one.
Beautiful.
That one was so good.
Beautiful. I would say, if you were to tell me one movie that's like sexual empowerment, combats the male gaze, I would say Yes, God. Yes, God.
Yeah,
really
that also has some good, like, religious deconstruction, like, from a cultural perspective.
Yes.
Where she, like, kind of grapples with her faith and, like, is this okay? Which was really interesting.
Yeah, also double standards, I think, they're really interesting.
Yeah.
Movie.
No, that's a great movie. Yeah, you were talking about, like, Greek mythology, and I remembered my freshman year of high school, so this is, like, a book that many people can read. I read the Penelopiad along with the Odyssey, the Penelopiad
yes,
by Margaret Atwood, and I mentioned her earlier, and that's, like, kind of a retelling of the Odyssey through Penelope, which was Odysseus's wife's perspective, like, as she's, like, waiting for him, and that is, like, a really, really interesting novel, and, like, for my final in the class, I had to write, like, an essay about whether I thought it was a feminist novel or not, and I came to, like, the conclusion that it wasn't, because throughout the book, Penelope, like, actually, like, pretty seriously slut-shames Helen of Troy, and she's like, why would this, like, woman act this way? Like, why is she, like this? She's the worst woman alive. Like, women should not be, like, in this position at all. Like, I, like, fundamentally do not agree with the way this person is acting. So I think that's a really interesting thing to, like, deconstruct for yourself.
Yeah.
And kind of examine of, like, okay, like, where are these characters going wrong? So that one was really good. Her body and other parties is, like, kind of a queer anti-male gaze book that I loved. It's, like, short stories, too, which I honestly, like, recommend if you're getting back into reading, is to read a short story collection, because you can finish one in one sitting and, like, feel way more accomplished than, like, finishing a couple chapters of a longer novel. So that's a good trick. But yeah. I would say Her Body and Other Parties, and then I recently read Trick Mirror by Gia Tolentino, and that was, like, a really good collection of essays kind of on, like, a cultural perspective. Like, she has one on why she doesn't want to get married, which I thought was really interesting, because she is, like, I think she's a straight woman in a long-term partnership with a man, and, like, talking about, like, going to weddings. She's a little bit older than us, and she talks about, like, going to her friends' weddings and being asked all the time, like, oh, like, you have this, like, boyfriend that you really love, like, when are you getting married, when are you getting married? And she's like, that's, like, not something that I want at all. And so, like, her deconstructing why that is. She also has this great essay on complex female characters and, like, how they, like, train us to be, and, like, how they're not, like, complete people a lot of the time, which is really, really cool, and I, like, highly recommend reading at least that one. But yeah, I'm trying to think of, like, TV or, like, movies that I've seen recently, and I kind of can't think of any off the top of my head. I haven't been watching, like, a lot of, I've been watching, like, more, like, kind of film bro-y stuff, like Fight Club and Taxi Driver, which are movies I recommend, but are not, like, super female gazey. I don't think they even pass, like, the Bechdel test. But, yeah, I would say maybe, like, Sex Education from, like, a sexual empowerment perspective.
Wait, sorry, what'd you say?
Sex Education. Like, I've definitely I've definitely recommended this before, but from, like, a sexual empowerment perspective especially, like, it just covers, like, such a vast array of, like, sexual experiences. So I think it's, like, a really good, like, kind of place to start if you're, like, unsure of even, like, where to go. And it's, like, super sweet. I loved it. But yeah, what else? I don't know. In terms of music, there's, like, a new Teen Suicide album coming out. And I've really been enjoying that. I listen to a lot of sad music. I've also been listening to a lot of, like, Vampire Weekend, and Bright Eyes, but yeah, that's, like, it for me.
Okay, yeah, so if you have any questions about this episode, feel free to reach out to us on Instagram. If you need any more recs for sexual empowerment, and female gaze, also reach out, because I probably can think of a lot more if given more time. I could just, like, name a few off the top of my head. But if you need more recs, reach out to us. And yeah, our next episode is going to be kind of, like, more of, like, a processing episode for what's been happening with Roe v. Wade and Reproductive Justice. We have already done a Reproductive Justice episode where we had people from Planned Parenthood come in as guests. So definitely check that one out. But this next one is really just going to be more, like, processing and getting our thoughts out. But yeah, thank you so much for listening.
Yeah, thank you so much for listening. You can follow us on Instagram. I think it's dirtytalk.pod. And yeah, thank you so much. We really appreciate, like, all of the attention that our podcast has been getting. And if you have any ideas, any, like, thing you want us to speak on, anything you think we should be aware of, or any questions, like, don't hesitate to reach out. We have an Instagram, we have an email. But yeah, thank you.